donc la matinée avec une intervention de Helmi Gervilioma qui s'intitule Navigating Borderscapes and Belonging, Memories of Children's Radio Listening in Finland. So Helmi is going to speak in English and I give her the beginning right now.
Thank you, Jean-Paul. Dear colleagues and friends, it gives me great joy to be here in Porvoo. I don't know why there is this small echo, but it doesn't matter. I try not to speak too close. I wish to thank all the organizers. This has been a great event, and especially after the long corona break, I really appreciate that we could come here. So today I'm talking about navigating borderscapes, memories of children's radio listening in Finland. Actually, my paper is based on an article in this book called Troubling Inheritances. And I have not written this article alone. I have written it together with my colleagues, Elina Hytönen-Ng and Sonja Pöllänen. And as a whole, this book might be interesting to someone who is interested in music, memory, aging. And in this book, we are especially trying to see and examine how these three intersect outside a formal therapeutic context or framework, and a kind of offering a counter-narrative to age as decline. In October 2018, we two authors and another colleague, Sinikka Vakimo, we organized an inheritance tracks workshop in eastern Finland. Participants are asked to choose in advance two inheritance tracks available as recordings, a song they have inherited from their past and another that they would like to pass on. They are also asked to describe how they first encountered these songs. The event took place at the Vesijärvi Library Hall. Name had to be disguised. And in eastern Finland, which was a familiar place, this library was very familiar to all the past participants. And during the discussions, the participants moved between different layers of remembering, recalling emotionally laden past places, times, and memory objects such as recalled players. Through listening to the discussion and later to the recordings made during the event, we observed that the participants' narrations revealed their creation and navigation of national, regional, class-related, and relation-related borders. In this chapter and or this paper, we analyze something we call belongingness in between. And actually, this is because after starting to analyze the material, it was almost amazing to me how many kinds of borders there appeared in the material. There was a strong appearance of the Second World War, border crossing between Soviet Union, Orthodoxism, etc. And people were bringing up their class background and their childhood homes, education, poorness, and juxtaposed, for instance, with classical music. And so we paid special attention how understandings of past borderscapes are created in the present and to the technology and its role in remembering musical mediations. And I really like this Van Dijk's, it's quite old, I don't exact, it's somewhere from 2002, but I like this article by Van Dijk where he talks about popular music between personal and collective memory, and he says that how surprisingly often the enabling apparatus becomes part of the recollecting experience. So I'm talking a little bit about that as well. So what do I mean with bordering? In the article, we came up with a concept of belongingness in between, which means kind of working at and across the layers of musical remembering using the concepts of bordering and borderscapes. I think these concepts have been quite recently emerging in multidisciplinary border studies, and they are used to describe the multi-sided relational, cultural, and socio-spatial configuration of borderlands, resulting in and given form by discourses, locational practices, and material outputs. And here I'm analyzing border making and mediated acts of remembering through an examination of this workshop, discussion of older adults between, they were born, all born between 1946 and 1957, which means they were kids or children during the late 1940s and during 1950s. And what is this inheritance tracks? It is actually a kind of methodological model which was created by cultural and gender scholar Professor Ross Jennings. She adapted it from a BBC radio program called actually Inheritance Tracks. And so she's using it as a research method, and we copied it from that. And the idea is exactly as I said, that people are asked to choose in advance two inheritance tracks available as recordings somewhere. And they have to choose one song they have inherited from their past and another that they would like to pass on. And they are also asked to describe how they first encountered their chosen song. And so afterwards, of course, we analyzed how the participants' narrations revealed their creation of these navigated through these national, regional, class-related, and relational borders. And I try to remember that we have a theme as radio, so I try to focus on radio listening, but it's not always possible because people go here and there, and there's also a very interesting story about how you can remember differently. I say here that I focus on two stories, but because of time limits, I just here decided to skip the story of Raya, although it is very interesting. I will just focus on the story of Maya, who was born in mid-1950s. And then I go towards a sort of discussion about relational technologies and radio as a material object. And a very interesting finding was that basically, all the tracks that we got from the people came from one particular radio program called Saturday's Most Wanted Tracks. It in Finnish, Lauantain Toivotut Levyt. And I will end up discussing the meaning of this one particular program, which was first launched in 1935 in Finland. It has never stopped. It's still there. It's still extremely popular. So now I'm coming to Maya's story. Just check if I forgot something. Yeah, let us begin with Maya's story. Maya painted an interesting picture of the place where she grew up and what music meant in connection to the place. She was born a decade after the World War II In a small rural community in the northeastern province of Kainuu, a region that is often portrayed as beautiful, but also as one of Finland's poorest areas. The town she was born in suffered greatly during World War II, as Finland broke its ties with Germany toward the end of the war. The German army burned not only practically all the Lapland, but also parts of northeastern Finland. And Maija's hometown was among those burned down completely in September 1944. And she said, everything was burned. There was not one old house left except the church and pigsty, any pig house. Relics of war featured prominently in Maija's childhood. She played games in trenches, at old battle sites with helmets, rifle cartridges, and all kinds of war stuff. Maija described her identity in a nutshell. In the 1950s, I was a little girl in the middle of the woods and my sisters. She chose her inherited music track during the workshop, not beforehand. Since she worked with children throughout her career, she had dealt with a lot of music and songs. And music had also been a very important part of her childhood family life. So she said that it was not easy to pick up one particular track. The one she finally chose was the chorus of Hebrew slaves, Vapen Siero, from Giuseppe Verdi's opera Nabucco. I'm sorry. Thank you. Well, in the late 1950s, Maija's maternal uncle moved to Australia to work, and when he returned, he brought a record player with him. Maija explained how and why the song came to mind. So she said that in our family, we had always been interested in music, even if life was incredibly poor there in my childhood. But in the last minutes, a memory came to my mind when it was so poor. My mother's brother went to Australia for work. It must have been at the end of 50s or early 60s, and he was there for 4 years. And when he came back, he had a record player and a lot of classical records with him. And at some points, Maija's mother asked to borrow her brother's record player. And our mother, she listened to classical music really a lot because she was terribly musical, even though she had never gone to school, and she loved music. The beautiful piece of music has stayed in my mind. I had not listened to it a lot, but I recognize it. Chorus of the Hebrew Slaves. It is interesting how Maija juxtaposed her mother's and her uncle's great interest in classical music and the fact that her mother had not been educated and that the uncle was doing hard manual labor in Australia. Okay, I try to play it a little bit.
Escape.
Okay, Yeah. Go down. Yeah.
Yes, got it.
Just one click on it.
I did it.
One click.
One more click.
Yeah, and then space.
Okay. Space. Okay, I just put a little bit forward.
Viime minuuteilla tuli sitten semmoinen.
This is Maija. Maija talking.
Aaro. Niin
and soon the song will appear.
Töihin ja se oli varmaan jotta 50-luvun loppua ja ehkä 60-luvun alkua ja olin siellä sitten niin kuin 4 vuotta töissä ja sitten kun se tuli sieltä pois, niin siinä meidänkin pitää saada niin kuin meille se Aaron levy soitin ja tuota. Ja siellä sitten meidän äitini ihan kauheasti kuunteli sitä klassista musiikkia, koska äiti on niin kuin kauhean niin kuin musiikaalinen.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is a compilation I made from the Ken diaporama. Yes.
If you want to go.
Great. Thank you. So her comments relate all the time to the border between the working class and the bourgeoisie, and the category feature of listening to classical music is not typically linked to the working or uneducated classes. In the next excerpt, Maya continues connecting the sad, poor, literally burnt, and lost history of her own home region to the fresh winds from the big world that listening to Va Pensiero brought to her. It is good to hear, bear in mind that her concrete memory objects, the record player and the records, had been physically brought to her town across the border from the greater world, from Australia. And she said that this was like, because everything was burned, it was somehow like a kind of breeze from there, like from the great world, that this hometown is not the only world. There's something more to it. And Maya said that as a child, when she was listening to the song, she saw in her mind's eyes how the slaves walked in a long line after the other. And she didn't, of course, she didn't understand the words, though. Her mother was religious, and even if the words were unknown, the title of the song gave a hint that the content of the song dealt with the Old Testament. And actually, the lyrics deal with remembering my country so lovely and lost. Again, as I probably, I don't know if I said in the that we did this workshop with these five older adults, and then we also picked up some of them for a deep interview. And we met again Maya and her husband, who also participated in the workshop, in June 2020. Maya mentioned that the record player and classical music album she had mentioned in the workshop were right there in the house, in the attic. After the interview, we received an email from Maya with a picture of the album cover, which you saw, and an astonished note. Yes, there were many tracks on the record that her uncle brought from Australia, but Va Pensiero was not one of them. So what is this interesting? It's becoming like a detective story. I will come back to this in the end, this kind of remembering differently. But in any case, an interesting discussion in the interview came up when Maya said that for children, classical songs that were performed on vinyl in a foreign language, they were ways for them to try to learn the language. And this was discussed in the workshop as well. So, because these children, they kind of developed their own language when they listened to songs on foreign languages. They do not understand the words, and they turn the words into their own language. It's called maybe gibberish or double Dutch, which may sound humorous to others. And typically the gibberish lyrics spread, and often the funny gibberish versions of particular popular refrains are known broadly in the whole language area. And so the song is kind of made one's own as an invented Finnish. Another concrete example of this one was Maya's husband's inheritance track, which was the Banana Boat song sang by Harry Belafonte. There is a third stanza on the song, "Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana." Maybe you remember that. In any case, in Finnish children, I remember it from my childhood, we say, "Kallista kalinaa kalini banana," which is nonsense, but it can be interpreted something like "expensive clatter kalini banana." So I skip Raya's story because of And now I come to the radio things. If someone is interested in Raya's and other stories, she can read that article, which comes out very soon. So nearly all of the workshop discussion about the selected song highlighted listening to the radio and particularly to some very popular music programs, such as Saturday's Most Wanted Tracks. The radio program was aired for the first time in November 1935, and it is still aired weekly by the Finnish Broadcasting Company, the publicly owned radio station. The one-hour program's original broadcasting time was on Saturday at 5 o'clock. Today the show is 50 minutes long and it's still broadcast on from 6:10 to 7 p.m. The format has remained the same throughout the 85 years of broadcasting. The first half of hour consists of Western art music, including operettas, which is in line with the FBC's ideology of trying to civilize the general population, and popular music is aired towards the end. After the first half hour come the Finnish schlagers, including foxtrot and waltzes, and in the 50s, for instance, after the impatient moments of waiting, come the foreign hits, including songs by Paul Anka and Harry Belafonte. The producer selects the music based on listener requests. and the radio archives have more than 300,000 request letters waiting to be studied. one program includes 10 to 12 songs. Mainly middle-aged or older people send in requests, but different generations listen to it. One of the songs the participants heard in the workshop was one of the all-time favorites of the program, namely Grandfather's Straw Hat, and some other songs played have also been heard on the program. The program Wanted Tracks had a lot of relevance in the 50s and 60s because FBC had a monopoly and there was only one radio station until the year 1963 when the so-called parallel channel was established. Saturday's Most Wanted Tracks stayed on the original general channel and maintained its enlightenment-oriented program policies, while the parallel channel slowly started to include other types of entertainment and popular music in its broadcast. Commercial radio stations were allowed in Finland only after 1985. Thus it is no wonder that before 1963 it was really rare to hear a catchy schlager or other popular tracks on the radio. Asko, one of the participants, reported that he heard from friends that kids were always riveted to the radio to hear Saturday's Most Wanted Tracks back then, and they were of the opinion that if one stared at the radio rigorously and intently enough, the radio would play Mexico Express, which was their favorite song. That was one of the all-time favorites of Finnish children and adults in 1950s and 60s. Comes from the melody of Orient Express, a song from 49, I think. But it was made a Finnish version, almost like a play-like character. Very many sounds, actually, the sounds of train and guns and things that interest children. So children especially seem to have a reciprocal relationship with the radio as a material object. Another participant, Raya, recognized herself in Asko's story of a child who was sure that intensive staring could indeed affect what could be heard from the appliance. There is generational similarity with regard to the thoughts of Maya, Raya, and Asko, who all at some point of their childhoods imagined the radio as a box filled with really small people who were performing music inside. Asko had a similar story about instruments like mandolin and violin, and he would ask as a child, where inside this instrument does the music really reside? The chorus of the Hebrew slaves brought up the memory of Saturday nights for many participants, since it was the song heard often in the radio show. And let me see. Yeah. The participants' similar perspectives and shared vision, as I put it, created a link between the participants and the materiality of the music and the program. As we all know, music can have an intensity that creates sensations in our bodies that can sometimes be even more meaningful than the meaning itself. Earlier in this paper, I pointed out that only when Maija found the actual 12 record box of light classical music did she realize that she could not have listened to the chorus of the Hebrew slaves from the vinyl. The song was not there. She said she must have heard it in the radio. And also Asko already hinted that he does not remember whether he really listened to the piece on the radio, but based on general recollection on what typically happened on a Finnish Saturday night, he must have heard the chorus on the radio. I just say that Asko said that exactly one thinks that as a child that people went to sauna and then listened to the radio and then so on. And the same thing is mentioned, I found this Helsingin Sanomat, the main Finnish journal article about the program when it filled 60 years, and I found it interesting. The writer Maija Alftan said that first of all, we had 6-day work week, on Saturdays the work day was a bit shorter, but it was like Maija Alftan says that this program, Saturday's Most Wanted Tracks, used to belong to the rhythms of life as similarly self-evident part as the Saturday sauna. It was still for the baby boomers the only program where they could hear in their early teens the newest schlagers. Everything else has changed, but Saturday's Most Wanted has not. When an enthusiastic innovator has tried to swap the popular music into the beginning of the show, or tried to tell the names of the tracks before playing the tune, the phone lines were jammed. So you have to have it simply as that. You must not alter the program. First, you must play all the arias, Hungarian dances, religious songs, and folk songs, and only after that you can play schlagers. Even now, more than 50 years later, Maija still related to the record player as a memory object. This became clear when she described how she still has her uncle's record player and the vinyls in the attic. I'm coming towards the end. It is not strange at all that in the workshop Maija remembered differently how she first heard Vapensieri. The record player she saved in her own attic is clearly not only an ordinary memory object. It is an object that elicits deliberate or involuntary memories of homeland, home culture, important places, episodes of one's own autobiographical past and significant social relations. This is how Marshall defines memory object. And it is even more than that. It is an evocative object and a thing to think with. The record player for Maija was an object to think and feel with. It carried passions and ideas. I'm just coming towards the end now. A few lines for conclusion. I think this was a very interesting method that proved very producing in productive when we think about how to produce material material for analysis on mediated acts of remembering. Besides the researchers, the participants in our workshop had been born within approximately 10 years of each other in the bleak living conditions of post-war Finland. In their childhood and youth, socio-economic and cultural conditions meant that the technologies through which music could be heard were scarce. And the last minutes of the workshop were dedicated to evaluating the discussion, and the participants voiced very positive comments, and they said the atmosphere was relaxed and conversational, and they all laughed together, but they also were emotionally moved together. Maija said that I participated in time travel to my own childhood, so there were points of contact between other people's stories and my own. And so one of the participants actually used the word generation experience. So they noticed it themselves. And we used a kind of, we were surprised how much likeness and confluence the discussion and music listened, revealed and created. And we thought that music can be considered one of the effective gateways for remembering moments, and it also creates new shared moments as experienced during the workshop. Listening to each other's tracks and discussing them created affects, feelings of likeness and confluence, and the common affective attunements and materiality of music was a gateway for remembering moments. I think I read that already. So we were sort of also found many examples of bordering and border crossing, and different border crossing possibilities were discussed and imagined, and there was a very included lively borderscapes between classes, fantasies, and comfort created by classical music in poor living conditions. So the participant who called it a generational experience was really right, especially for those after the Second World War. The workshop also highlighted the importance of nationally shared rituals within their families by emphasizing the radio program Most Wanted Tracks and its importance to the participants. While the program almost like marked the transition from the working week to the Holy Sunday, it highlighted the border between the secular and the sacred. It also demonstrated how much the radio influenced generational experiences by transmitting the older generation's musical tastes to the younger ones, which is also a border crossing. In this sense, the inheritance of music tracks went on in hundreds of thousands of households in Finland via radio listening, as part of a special Saturday evening ritual and atmosphere. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shelby, for this wonderful, wonderful lecture. Very rich and very interesting. So I think we have time to discuss, to ask questions, to discuss with your talk and your presentation. There is already some remarks and people want to. Yes, I keep.
Thank you, Helmi. It's wonderful, wonderful presentation. What you were talking about was definitely a generational media experience. If I understood it right, they were people born in the 40s or baby boomers. Is that correct?
Late 40s and early 50s.
Yeah. What I was thinking that if you think of the Finnish Broadcasting Company and the radio programs that they have broadcasted, they started to change in the 60s with Melody Radio and rock music programs in the 70s. And then, like you mentioned, the Finnish media scape was deregulated in 1985. And now our media scape is highly fragmented. You can get songs of your childhood and songs from the youth in any channel. There are actual commercial stations who are airing only nostalgic music from the 60s and from the 70s. And for instance, for myself, I think I have barely heard Lauantain toivotut levyt, because it wasn't a thing for me. I was listening to a couple of rock music radio programs in the 70s. So I guess my question is, will Lauantain toivotut levyt find new listeners, and how are they able to do that?
Well, I was actually a little bit trying to find out about this. And I read the media discussion every time that the program fills in years. Like now it's not only 60, it's 85 or something like that. What is that? It's a very old program. So every time it fills years, they interview the producers. And this question was exactly asked from the producer, who said that it has been noticed that there are this new generation, and new generations start to listen to it. So it's strange, but it's true. And there's some sort of weird attraction with the fact that it has not changed. And the Finnish National Radio makes a big point of it not anymore being the enlightenment media, because that was very, very clear in the beginning. It was said out loud. That's the point, civilizing people and enlightening them. But now they say that they are not doing it anymore. But why is this program that clearly has that old agenda, why is it so attractive even? I know younger people who make a point over that they belong to the group who is listening to this program. And it has become maybe like a cultural capital thing, that there are these people who listen to, they are good people, and there are the ones who are not listening to, they are not part of that group.
And also one possible explanation is that the music they are playing is actually very diverse. And if you think of, for instance, commercial radios at the moment in Finland or anywhere else in the world, they are very, very strictly formatted. They want to format and target their music and their content to a certain group of people. And usually they are playing same songs over and over again. So if you think of Lauantain toivotut levyt, what they are doing, are they actually, it's very multi-genre program. They are playing music from all music genres. So in that sense, it keeps it very entertaining, because eventually you never know what's going to follow next.
Thank you. Is there any other remarks or question? If not, I would have a question to help me. At the beginning, you were talking about how the children, in a sense, transform their language and use, like, what you call gibberish. So can you tell us a bit more about this process?
Well, I don't know if it happens in other countries, but in Finland, definitely. When these children, for instance, who came from very poor conditions, had not many chances to hear foreign music, but they had radio, they had these records. So, of course, it's impossible to understand Vapensiero. So you just start to sing with it, and it slowly transforms into something nonsense. And I don't know how it happens, but I think this, for instance, and the same goes to popular songs like Banana Song. So I think some, I don't know how does it go, but it somehow spreads the like this kallista kalinaa kalini banana. It just becomes the common phrase, like nowadays the phrases from comedy programs or something. It somehow spread. I don't know how did children do it, but it was oral culture, yeah. And yeah, I don't know if it, you have the same phenomenon in France or do you remember from your childhood, but we definitely have it.
Yeah, I think the sound is like the medium to remember also. So even yes. If you don't understand the meaning of the words, you remember the sound of it, so you kind of transform your memory only through sound and what you heard from the song or...
That's a good point. I was talking about memory. That's really a good point.
Thank you, Helmi, for this presentation. I'm wondering, when you mentioned that Finnish radio had a kind of a mission to civilize people, it is quite common, of course, for all these radio stations established in the 20s throughout Europe in establishing let's say standard language practice in speaking, and of course in a kind of domestic atmosphere at the same time. So how much this entertainment part of the program was actually a part of the program from the very beginning? Because I can't imagine this kind of show you mentioned from 1935, which is one equivalent of something I was speaking about yesterday, without, of course, having these wishes to listen to local music, I mean, local traditional Finnish music or music for dance and this kind of stuff.
Well, I have not myself listened to the oldest programs, but they do say that the format has stayed the same and that there were only, well, it went slowly from the high towards the low, and so there was this real classical music, operettas, and then was folk music, which could include Finnish language folk music, and finally the last and the lowest was foreign schlagers, and you could have probably in the beginning only one foreign schlager in the end, but now I think it's like half and half. Would I listen to it? I do often listen to it, and I also use it as a ritual in transforming to the holiday mode. So it's still, you still have the same, but now it's more, we have more like 20 minutes of foreign popular music.
Maybe another question. When you made this research, I mean, that's wonderful piece of research. Did you have the sense of people were kind of nostalgic towards the music they used to listen to when they were kids, or there was kind of a special feeling or different of all variety of feelings towards their memory?
Well, you probably know the Svetlana Boym's book, The Future of Nostalgia. I don't know if you know it, but I think that's a wonderful book, and it says that nostalgia, it's often thought only as a bad thing, but actually it's not only a bad thing. So there are two types of nostalgia. The other one is reflective, and you're pondering and starting from your present life and creating connections to the past, and it is a kind of productive, very useful style of nostalgia. And the other one is conservative nostalgia, which is what the despotic governments try to people have a only it's very conservative type of which is I don't think I would rather say that this was a very reflective nostalgia. They were reflecting together, and of course this was also like a social remembering. It was not only individual, but it was very interesting how they started from individual childhood memories, but when discussing, they of course found that many people shared the same ideas, and so they could laugh, and yeah, they sometimes got emotional when they were talking about difficult things, but I would say that yes, nostalgia, but in a reflective and
productive,
to me, productive way. I guess Nicholas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and it was a wonderful presentation. So.